1, 2, 3, 4. Some might be offended that I'm sharing the secret. I'll make an exception because I think you'll keep it. What I'm telling you's true. Cross my heart, hope to die. What have you got to lose? Why would I lie?
Hello and welcome to We Always Lie to Strangers, a podcast about Ozark's history, folklore, and beyond. My name is Sharp Woolston.
I'm Daniel Smiley.
I'm Gus Carlson.
And I'm Raymond Mathis.
And we might always lie to strangers, but not on this show, because we're all friends here. Thank you for joining us. This episode was actually one of the first scripts that I wrote, and it has just been getting pushed back and pushed back. But today, we're finally getting to it, the Cleburne County Draft War.
Let's go.
I know that this is an event that happened, but I know none of the details, so I'm stoked for this one.
Pretty much going to be all new info for me, too.
So, today's yarn begins on May 18th, 1917, with the Selective Service Act of 1917.
Okay.
With an estimation that an army of 1 million would be needed, the United States awaited volunteers for World War I.
Woo!
After 6 weeks, only 73,000 had signed up, and Congress voted to enact the draft.
Which this would have been...
World War I.
Probably the first draft, though, since... Because I'm pretty positive we didn't have a draft for the Spanish-American War. So this would have been the first draft since the Civil War, so the first in most people's living memory.
Wow, that history degree is coming through. Woodrow Wilson's administration and Congress were worried about what the reaction would be to conscription, as the last draft during the Civil War led to the New York City draft riots, which is interesting, but not in the Ozarks or the U.S. Interior Highlands.
It was racist, though, so like, look it up. They burned a fucking orphanage, like a African-American children's orphanage.
Wow.
So.
Right.
There were a number of armed resistances in Arkansas, Texas, Louisiana, Tennessee, and Oklahoma, most notably the Green Corn Rebellion in Oklahoma.
Yeah.
But that's just out of our range, though it is on my list of episode ideas that are technically outside of the range. And then... as I said at the top of the episode, today we'll be focusing on the Cleburne County Draft War. Now, there were armed draft resistances in Polk, Searcy, and Newton counties, but a couple of things sets the Cleburne County Draft War apart from the others. First, simply, Cleburne County was the most written about.
Good reason. I'm definitely Googling where Cleburne County is.
It's where Heber Springs is. Grooseberry Lake.
So was the Water Panther involved?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons that I split up the episodes. Second, it's the only draft war whose story doesn't revolve around socialism and the Appeal to Reason newspaper.
Okay.
Appeal to Reason was a leftist newspaper published in Kansas City.
Yeah, it was a very big one. Like,
yes, it was.
I can't remember if it was the main one for the Socialist Party, but if it's not, it was a big one.
I can't remember either. I was reading a little bit about it, but it was just I just needed a little bit about it because, like I said, it doesn't actually pertain to the story, but
yeah.
It definitely was a big deal.
It was. I mean, I remember learning about it.
The final thing that sets apart the Cleburne County Draft War of the others in Arkansas were that the others were pretty quick incidents and didn't involve violence. And then before we get to the main part of the story, just a couple of things. Slackers was the word used that would later become draft dodger. And delinquents is the word for a person called to the draft that never reported for induction. And then a deserter obviously is a deserter.
Okay.
But in all of the sources, they're saying slackers and delinquents, but you can just think of that as a draft dodger.
Just imagining Principal Skinner saying it.
The Simpsons?
Yeah.
Steamed hams.
Steamed hams. Just to put into perspective, I'm assuming this isn't going to deal with this with getting rid of socialists in America, because you said that, but like, it's important to remember that at this point, like, there are socialist mayors and socialist city council members. There's a socialist, like, and including in Arkansas, like Winslow had a socialist mayor, right? Mena, I'm pretty positive, did as well. From like 1892, World War One is the heyday of the Socialist Party, is what Eugene Debs's party.
Yeah, well, and also keep in mind that I'm kind of doing a thing where I'm hoping that a decent, let's say half of the audience, are people that find this stuff interesting but won't do any reading on their own. They're just coming to us. And
first mistake.
I've got a lot of script ideas that kind of not a lot, but there are definite scripts that involve socialism and the early 20th century. Or today's yarn truly started July 6th, 1918, when Cleburne County Sheriff Jasper Duke.
Whoa!
Again,
what a
name. We're in the era of good names still. Like,
yeah, it's
like Old West, and now we're in. We're still. The era of good names was very long. It ended recently. We're still in it, though, for this story.
Jasper Duke. I like that could also be like a character from a fantasy novel, like the Jasper Duke.
Yeah, or a steakhouse.
And Gus. We said Jasper Duke and Gus crossed something off of his plans for his comic.
Right.
But Cleveland County Sheriff Jasper Duke and two officers recruited two men with the names of S.A. Turner and Porter Hazelwood to help them search an area in the southern part of the county.
Great names.
Again. Between the communities of Pearson and Rosebud for deserters and delinquents.
Pearson and Rosebud. I like.
I know where Rosebud is. I don't know about Pearson.
Yeah, I like when I don't know where places are.
Remember. Dang. So,
the Alamo.
No, I was going to say remember the map, but this was in the group text and not in the podcast. But. Daniel and I have two different railroad maps that are from after this time period, and there's a large amount of places that don't even exist anymore. I know roughly where Rosebud is, but who knows if Pearson still exists.
Rosebud, which it's like the population is 482, but it does have a coffee roastery, not a roaster, roastery that's called Rosark. Rosark Hills Coffee Roastery. This is brought to you by Rosark Hills Coffee Roastery, so hopefully they're not, like, ghouls.
Sheriff Duke had offered Turner and Hazelwood each a gun and $50. Searches were made in several houses in the southern part of the county,
He promised them a... What? Say that line again. We just let that slide. If they like joined up, he would give them a gun
and $50
to
that's a lot in 1819 dollars.
Yeah, I was gonna say that
well,
seems
this is,
insane.
First off, it's 1918.
Oh, I thought okay, that makes
World
way
War
more
I, not the War of 1812.
What? Okay, never mind. I thought you said 1819 earlier, and I was like, I'm just gonna go with it.
No, it's 1918. I can reread this paragraph if we need to.
I think we do.
Now, today's yarn really started. On Saturday, July 6th, 1918, with Sheriff Jasper Duke.
I didn't think you were going back this far.
Sheriff Duke had offered Turner and Hazelwood each a gun and $50 for joining them to look for delinquents.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I thought they were the delinquents. So he's getting posse and bribing them to go find draft dodgers.
Yes.
How? Okay. Okay.
Don't Google too much.
I'm not Googling. That's insane to just be like, we need seasonal help. We need to go. Okay. Cool. Cool. But, this is going to end well.
Yeah. And searches were made in several houses, but no one was found. Before sunrise on Sunday, the posse arrived at the home of Tom Atkinson, whose son, Bliss, had been a delinquent since October.
Bliss.
Sheriff Duke, at some time earlier, had unsuccessfully searched the house for Bliss. So the sheriff has already been inside this house. Mm-hmm. The posse hid in the barn outside of the house. While no one claimed the firing of the first shot, gunfire was exchanged between the occupants of the barn and the occupants of the house, leading to Porter Hazelwood, one of the recruited men for a gun and $50, being shot. The posse retreated and left Hazelwood behind.
What?
Jerks.
Yeah. I mean, like, shot? Okay.
Yeah, what level Hazelwood, of shot are
yeah, like, it, I mean, he's dead or just like, oh, we'll come back
they
for
ring
you.
Him? Was he just really Hazelwood. Annoying at camp and they just were looking for the excuse?
Now, oh, oh, my tummy. Hazelwood was moved on a mule to a nearby farmhouse where he died.
Fuck.
Damn.
Do we know what he, I mean, oh. Cause
he was shot.
Yeah, but he shot, but like, it could be, it could be a .30-06. It could be a shotgun with a slug in it. I mean, it's, this is, okay, weird stuff.
Sheriff Duke. Sheriff
just sounds like a terrible. It sounds like a terrible band.
Like, you just can't Sheriff have Duke. Like you can't have two titles in a row like that.
I know. Sheriff Duke and the posse went to Heber Springs, where they began recruiting a Panthers. Larger posse.
Go Wildcats!
And by noon, had organized 25 men.
Okay.
When the newer, larger posse arrived back at the Atkinson house, they discovered that Tom Atkinson had...
I have a question for you guys. Yes. When does it stop being a posse and become a mob? Like, what is the number crossover?
I feel like posses are deputized and mobs are a little more freelance.
You, if that's the question you're asking, you're going to love this.
I mean, that's the... I was going to say, I agree. I feel like the fact that the sheriff is organizing it means that, like, this is sanctioned... state actions, regardless of where it goes from here.
I'm so excited that when I told Raymond I was going to do this script, that he didn't read more. Because, buckle up.
Didn't I send this to you?
I hadn't heard about this.
Yeah.
You sent this to me.
They're sharp. They didn't have seatbelts back then.
So when the larger posse arrived back at the Adkisson, it's Adkisson. Ad kiss on. Adkisson, yeah. So when the posse arrived back at the Atkinson house, they discovered that Tom Atkinson had also organized a group of men, other deserters and delinquents, to shore up the defenses of his home.
What?
Men weren't just inside the farmhouse. They were in the trees and bushes around the house as well. A gun battle erupted that lasted for 45 minutes without a single casualty on either side. As the gang of slackers slowly retreated into the thick woods behind the home and eventually set fire to the undergrowth as they fled to prevent pursuit.
Whoa. Hey.
There's a Donald Harrington novel, Architecture of the Arkansas Ozarks, and I'm wondering if the whole gun battle with no casualties is referenced in that book. Because I know it's not the same era, but there's the Civil War section where both sides are all family and brothers, and they don't want to kill each other, so they constantly are missing in the battle, like missing shots and things like that on purpose, because they're all great shots, so they just miss on purpose.
I think most of these men would absolutely kill the other one.
Okay. So they're just all terrible shots.
Yeah.
I think it's also...
It's probably hard to shoot someone from a barn shooting somebody in a house.
And hoping you don't get shot, too.
Right.
Well, and I also, I couldn't, none of the sources that I found about this mentioned the distance between the buildings.
It's, whenever they do, like, studies on, like, accuracy, their accuracy during, like, actual firefights is always atrociously low when compared to their, you know, success rate, even on a range, even in, like,
right.
You know, where they're trying to, like, simulate battle and things like that. So I also think that's just part of it. When you're afraid you're about to get shot.
Right. After the gun battle and the escape of the gang of slackers, The posse had grown to around 100 men.
Damn.
The Searcy Home Guard arrived, which had been a recent replacement of the federalized Arkansas National Guard.
Okay. I was about to ask that question.
All right. So new question. When does it stop being a posse and start being a regiment?
Yeah, is it still in control of the sheriff or
this it depends home on guard? How hard all their collective dicks are.
When the home guard shows up, are they now in control?
I think the idea, it's like I said, this was one of my first scripts and I got pushed back a ton. And I can't remember, but I kind of think the idea was initially that the sheriff kind of had control. Mm-hmm. But we'll get to a couple of things that kind of changes the power.
Oh, okay. So, see, when you said the home guard, I was like, this is going to be like a euphemism for like white citizen councils or Klan type shit. And the first thing when I googled Home Guard World War One is something from KCUR, which I'm assuming is the Kansas City either public radio or PBS, that says the Home Guard was an unarmed force tasked with protecting infrastructure from potential enemy activities and maintaining law and order during labor activism, common at this time. So they were there to fuck shit up. But they were unarmed, technically.
Yeah, but they're kind of, they were also just kind of a replacement for the National Guard. Mm-hmm. Anyway, and there were also some bloodhounds brought up from Conway.
Okay.
To help with tracking, but there was so much smoke that they were useless. Two sheriffs from neighboring counties, T.C. Plant from White County, and W.W. Bishop from Faulkner County.
W.W. Bishop.
I thought we were in World War One, not World War Bishop.
W.W. Bishop. Well, this one goes diagonally. they came.
You did it.
Finally. So... T.C. Plant and W.W. Bishop had come from neighboring counties to help with the searches, but nothing could be found of the gang. So we've got T.C. Plant and W.W. Bishop helping with the area throughout the county. Meanwhile, back in Heber Springs, which is 10 miles from the Atkinson home and the location where Sheriff Duke had previously recruited the posse, was losing its collective mind as wild rumors were beginning to swirl. The residents of Heber Springs feared the religious beliefs of the gang, Russellism, believing it to be evil and anti-patriotic. Wait a second.
Russellism?
Like Russellville or Russell the name?
Yeah, Russellism. They fear
George Russell.
Not like really into wrestling.
Nope. You're going. We'll
that's
WrestleMania.
As the story unfolds, we will hear.
We're just into the soft like movement of leaves.
That would be the Russellers.
Okay, you're gonna have to explain this.
You will learn more as we go.
I don't like that.
But they believed that the gang of that followed Russellism, which they believed to be evil and anti-patriotic, and they also feared that the gang numbered 30 men, and they were desperate and evil and maybe even worse. They had begun to believe that the gang would lay siege to and attack Heber Springs.
So
I love the idea of siege warfare against Heber Springs. They've got a barbecue restaurant and a Harps.
Well,
hey, they got good fried chicken at Harps.
Damn straight.
I miss CV's fried chicken though. CV's got bought by Harps. Anyways,
this was pre Grease Fairy Lake, so
more of a Chester fried guy.
I mean, it's good, but you know, you gotta go to the gas station for it. Sometimes
she ain't no Martha Harp. God, I hope Martha Harp is the heroine of this episode.
Authorities in Heber Springs.
I was.
Golly. Authorities in Heber Springs requested help from Arkansas Governor Charles Brow, who the next day dispatched 30 men from the 4th Arkansas Infantry National Guard from Little Rock with 2 machine guns.
Shit.
Okay.
The combination.
So what did the other 28 men have?
So the combination of military, area police, and armed civilians now numbered over 200 people. And they began breaking into small groups.
And they had 2 guns.
Two machine guns. I imagine
I
imagine these are like the cannon-sized one with the wheels, you know.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. And they began
the Gatling gun in the back of a wagon in every like new Western movie.
Yes,
right.
They began breaking into small groups to search the countryside for the gangs. Homes were searched, and all food, clothing, and ammunition were confiscated and redistributed to the posse. People considered quote sympathizers were arrested. The Atkinson home was searched again to no avail. Despite the size and fervor of the posse, no one from the gang could be located, and not even evidence of where they had been.
I mean, these guys rule at hide and seek. Like, there's like no doubt about it. Every punctuation in the story is, we couldn't find them.
But, like, there's so much. Like, as long as you're not building a fire and it's July, right?
Yeah, I mean, truly.
Like, oh, yeah. I mean, just
it was
feel
colder
like it
back
be,
then.
Was that July? Was this? I don't have a joke there. Joking. I was trying to make a joke. It didn't work.
On Tuesday, July 9th, 2 days after the initial gun battle, a citizens' meeting was held in Heber Springs. The meeting decided to post guards on roads that led toward the Atkinson home, and while anyone could enter Cleburne County, no one could leave without proper credentials.
Whoa.
God, none of this is legal. Because, like, there's no martial law.
Also, like,
no...
kind of state-sponsored, though, too.
Oh, 100% state-sponsored.
Also, do you want to guess? I don't have the exact number for the population, but Heber Springs' population at this time was around 1,500.
Jesus. Okay.
Wow, it's doubled since then.
Sympathizers and relatives of the gang of resistors were rounded up and interred at the Edwards Hotel in Heber Springs, so they could not provide food or supplies to the gang. Many of them were afraid they would be lynched or the hotel would be set on fire. Also arrested was Houston Osborne, who, along with his entire family, was placed in jail. Osborne was a Russellite minister, and many believed he was the true instigator of the resistance.
Okay.
And I believe the Osbornes had an infant in their family that was in jail. I don't mean to laugh, but...
jailed infant?
At least they let them have the infant instead of... I mean, that's probably why they were like, shit, how are we going to feed this or change it? We might as well just leave it with them.
Yeah, with other infant guards.
Yeah, yeah. There was actually, you know, they were in a playpen and there were other babies around it.
And this is how Cupies were started.
Wrong state. Heber Springs was beginning to calm down. Most of the Russellites in the area were in jail, and with 200 men roaming the countryside, the gang of 30 men didn't seem so scary or likely to attack the town. The actual number of the gang was 8.
Nice.
On Wednesday, July 10th, search parties again went to the Atkinson home, where they discovered sugar, flour, lard, and ammunition, which some believed was proof that they were preparing to withstand a siege. Also found were multiple copies of various Russellite literature, including the Watchtower Bible and Tract Society.
Oh,
okay.
They're Jehovah's Witnesses.
Which proved their suspicions of a greater conspiracy.
Raymond, you mad?
Yeah.
Raymond's mad.
Sharp, next time I need you to put your notes on your computer screen. Because this seems like old man squinting at phone. Seems like most of your struggles right now.
No, well, the problem is So
some bifocals.
No, the problem is that I, like I said, I wrote the script a while ago. It's one of the first scripts I wrote.
And you haven't, and you didn't think to look over it before recording.
I did, and I read most of the first half, and was like, "Yeah, this is all fine." And then I kind of skimmed the back, but I found this section that says, "I can't go into full detail here, but one of the books that was at the house, the publishers and leaders of the Russellites had been arrested and tried for violation of the Espionage Act and were given sentences of 25 years." But I actually don't think I mentioned that again.
The Espionage Act is what they used for any dissenters from the war. So that's how Victor Berger, the socialist member of Congress, that was the excuse because he had done like a pamphlet. So they kicked him out of office. But that's why Eugene Debs gets thrown in jail, because he makes a speech in Canton, Ohio. And they're all given these like 20, 25, 30 year sentences. Now, most of them later get commuted, but like when you're going to fucking jail, you don't know that. And so again, to putting into the context of these Jehovah's Witnesses, like imagine your leaders have been sentenced to 25 years in jail. And like, you're not pacifist. You just can't take oaths, right? Like, you'll fuck people up if you need to. But you can't salute the flag.
I think you can still get a Victor Burger at the barbecue place in Heber.
See, it moves sideways.
Thanks.
Okay.
The citizens of Heber Springs had previously asked Governor Brow to declare a state of martial law, which he did not do. And then they held another meeting, and the citizens of the town voted to not declare martial law.
Okay.
The next 2 days, more searching led to nothing, but a man and his son were arrested on the road for carrying the Watchtower Bible. On Saturday, July 13th, the 4th Arkansas Infantry returned to Little Rock. But that afternoon, in nearby White County, Tom Akison's son-in-law surrendered to a farmer and was arrested. The next
surrender to a farmer.
Yeah, that's all. That's it just said. Agree. Yeah. The next day, four more men.
Sir, that's not my job. No, I give up. Sir, I'm just I'm hoeing the collards.
Right? You're the closest person to me right now. Let me surrender.
Listen, I got a lot of work.
I also like that they're combing the countryside, and it seems like the slackers just left the county. And like
shocking. Yeah.
There's other ways to leave Cleburne County other than roads.
Yeah. The next day, four more men surrendered, this time to the Searcy Home Guard, where they told them that they had only consumed peanuts and water for the previous 6 days. The next,
the Carver, we've all been there, you know, like it happens.
Over the next
Carver diet.
Shame they didn't even have any Coke to put the peanuts in.
That's a good one.
I had to explain that concept to my girlfriend and her family, the Coke and peanuts thing, and it's just entirely impenetrable to people not from here.
When I worked at the Elks Lodge in Fayetteville, there was a guy who only drank his beer with peanuts in the bottom of it. He's the only person that I saw do that with beer, but it made me want to try it.
Did you?
The Elks try Lodge.
It?
Not that I remember. This guy was old, and he had a special glass that looked like a mason jar instead of a normal pint glass. You know when like, and like I'm sure he was probably like a lawyer or something, but you know when like people want to be like folksy, mm-hmm. You know, the putting on. I don't know. It's the people who drive, like, Raptor trucks, right?
Yeah.
That was the vibe I always got.
Mm-hmm. Well, we know who to talk to exactly if you want to be like folksy.
What was that?
So we know who to talk to if you want to be folksy.
Yeah. Sharp Wilson.
Briar Rabbit. I'm really having to come to terms with not being very funny.
Listen, I'm the only person willing to laugh at things. I think we need an intervention to tell Gus and Daniel to laugh at some of these
hospital
jokes.
I laughed at the Briar
joke.
I did laugh at several things.
I don't always hear it. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Daniel, set up the mic. Set up the punchline again.
Oh, God. Wait, which one?
We know who to talk to about being folksy.
We know who to talk to about being folksy.
Tom Cotton.
Hey! Fuck that guy.
Over the next 2 days, the three remaining members of the gang...
Ah, shit, I didn't laugh again.
Wow.
There it is.
Got him.
Over the next 2 days, the three remaining members of the gang, Bliss, Hardy, and Tom Atkinson, all surrendered. At trial, Tom admitted to shooting Porter Hazelwood in self-defense. On his deathbed, Porter Hazelwood had said that the man who had shot him was Tom Atkinson. Yet the jury found his son Bliss guilty of second-degree murder and sentenced him to 20 years in prison, while Tom was sentenced to 2 years on voluntary manslaughter.
Okay.
Wow.
Bliss would be killed in prison 3 years later by a bank robber named Tom Slaughter as he attempted to break out of prison. Yeah, anyway, so Bliss is dead.
Suck it, Bliss.
And he was the kid, right? He's the younger.
He was the one that had dodged the draft, specifically.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. The response to the incidents in newspapers was varied.
Well, that's darkly poetic. Trying to avoid combat and then dying in combat at home.
Well, dying in jail.
The thing is that if he's a Jehovah's Witness, it's against their religion
to do it.
But they're not pacifists, right? He's not a Quaker. Not because he's not wanting to fight. It's just like I can't swear whatever oath you need me to swear.
Right.
So that's the weirdest thing about this.
We had a kid in my elementary class that was a Jehovah's Witness, couldn't do the, you know, pledge the allegiance every morning, got hell for it every single day. And it's just like, at a point, I got nothing on that, sorry. But
it's weird. And
yeah,
I don't know. I respect the conviction to like literally deal with this level of shit.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, because this is one of the few times that having like a particularly, I don't know, deeply held interpretation of the Bible doesn't actually like actively oppress someone.
Right. I mean, yeah, it just seems like taking, you know, idolatry to its, avoiding it to its logical conclusion. I mean, mm-hmm. I will say in my years of living in the woods, you know, respect to every belief to a certain extent, you know, and everything like that, but they are Jehovah's Witnesses when they drive, you know, miles on dirt roads are a little more difficult to get rid of than if in the suburbs when you're in the middle of like a phone call and there's someone at the door trying to convert you.
Nice.
The most difficult experience I ever had with someone just coming to my door randomly when I lived out in the woods on a dirt road was there was just this like black Cadillac that like drove down our driveway and I lived alone.
The ghost of Mr. Slaughter.
This guy gets out in a full suit and he's like comes knocks on the door and I answer the door and he's just like he looks me up and down, sees I'm like I was probably like 25 at this point, and he just goes, "Hey, you're not about to die, are you?" And I was like, "What?" Just a complete stranger. And then he hands me a business card. And he's opened some more, like, he's a mortician. He's just opened business in the area. And he was giving his card out. And I was just like, I'm locking my doors tonight. Like, this is just perfect hitman horror movie setup. Like,
jeez.
Just work on your sales pitch, man.
You dead yet? Would you like to be?
So I will gladly take the Jehovah Witness trying to save my soul versus, you know, a guy trying to bury me for money, you know?
So, are you going to explain what Jehovah's Witnesses are?
I mean, it's not in the script.
Okay, I love you, Sharp, but I feel like you need to define stuff that people aren't going to know. Like, people aren't going to know anything. They're not going to know, you know, that why the Jehovah's Witness don't draft. But, like, they believe, and see, this is the thing, I'm not a damn religious scholar, but they believe that there's only a very limited number of people who actually get to go to heaven, and they're the elect.
Well,
and
so,
I want to say the number is like 600, isn't it?
So part of the problem with this, and why I actually didn't go into that much detail, this is off script, but I did read about it some. So Russell, I did look up his name because I forgot. Charles Taze Russell. So he was the founder of T-A-Z-E is his middle name.
Wow.
So he started...
He invented the first taser.
Well, he was involved with the Bible student movement, which...
Means nothing to me.
Well, anyway, this kind of got... Basically, it gets really messy, but Charles Taze Russell ended up founding what would become Jehovah's Witness. It was called Russellism because he was the guy that was leading it. And
so it wasn't taking the name Jehovah's Witness at this time?
No, because part of this is because Charles Russell died like a year and a half before the events of the Cleburne County Draft War. And okay. After his death, as with a lot of fringe religions, the initial founder dies and then it turns into a bunch of schisms because
yeah.
All of these different people have different ideas mm-hmm. of where the, you know, where it should go.
Yeah.
So
see, I think that's very good information. And I think even if it's just that like last 20 second blurb of you being like, here's the guy, he founded the thing that became this. I don't know. I just feel like shoving that somewhere is good info.
I'd also say I'm not like super comfortable acting confident that, you know, there's not issues with Jehovah Witnesses because I don't know enough about their actual belief systems and how the actual hierarchy of their religion
works. I mean,
works,
I don't think they're any weirder than, let's say, like a Mennonite.
Right.
That's what I mean, as opposed to
I'm aware of some former Jehovah Witnesses that are not very cool with it, but I don't know
yeah.
how much that's, you know, in the way of that's because of how their home treated it versus how the organized religion part of it is versus...
I don't know any former Johos, like you said, that have a positive view of it. So that's a good point.
But most of the Jehovah's Witnesses I know left, and then their family was like partially ostracized because the people in our generation left. But then there's the guy that I worked with, really nice guy, but I, you know, didn't know him well. I know him as a coworker at a restaurant. But because I talked to them, I got put on the Jehovah's Witness list. And so for a while, they were coming to me all the time. And I remember one time I was like, look, I'll talk to you guys for a little bit. I'm sure people are asking you to leave all the time. We can chat. And the main thing I remember is someone said, do you know anyone with mental health problems? And I was like, yeah, of course I do. And then they were like, yeah, how's that going? And I was like, well, with most people I know with mental health problems, they have a breakdown. And then they get medicated, take some time to get around, and then they're completely fine, functioning members of society. I know plenty of people with, you mm-hmm. know, some people with severe mental problems that take care of it, and they're fine. It's, you know, it's not your fault, but it's something that you're responsible for. And they do a good job, and I'm proud of them. And they were like, well, no... They just need God in their life. And it was like, what are you talking about? And that's like the main thing I remember is me.
What is the one church in Harrison that has advertisements on 96.1 that makes me want to like swerve my car off into a cliff edge?
Oh, that's
it's some
talking about
non-denominational shit.
No, that's just Crisis Grocery and Deli.
Nice.
The good.
Man, Raven's folks moved out of Harrison, but he hasn't heard to do this.
I know, that's the thing. There's been no
dude,
reason.
Dude, you
for
can
me to
stream
be...
96.1.
What?
Yeah. That church, they have advertisements. Like the one I heard was like
starts with a bad cover of Black Hole Sun, but it's like True God.
Oh, I have heard that. Yeah. Oh my God! Yes.
And they say if Chris Cornell had written this song instead, he'd still be alive or something like that.
The first time I heard that, I was like out on a boat on Bull Shoals, and I was like, this kind of just ruined my day. This is terrible.
I was in the Hudson's parking lot, and I like stayed in the car. I stayed in the car to let it finish because I was like, "What the?"
We have all this.
It was wild.
96.1 slogans. They have like variations of it, and they're all horrible.
Okay. Jeez. Anyway, we've been chatting. I've only got a couple of paragraphs left of the script, and every time something like this happened, Raymond says, "We're talking about Harrison too much." the response to
I never talk about Harrison. This is a first for me.
You just brought up the radio ads. It's not being.
I know. I'm the first. It's my first time.
Real fast. Does Brand New Church still exist?
I don't know.
I think.
That's hopefully, a good question. Only at its original location in Bergman.
Love God, hate church. So did we. BNC. I remember that.
I'm a dirty heathen, so I don't keep up with this stuff.
There's one that's around here that I can't remember, but it's definitely like the new BNC. I don't know what it is. I forgot the name.
My aunt sent me a church that's in like Prairie Grove or something, and she somehow knows someone, like the pastor or something, and she was like, just thought you might want to check this out. I'll dig up and send it to y'all because it's unhinged. The response to the incidents in the newspapers were varied. One paper wondered if they had inherited lawlessness from their ancestors. Some newspapers thought they were just dumb hill folks. But many also noticed the influence of their religion, Russellism, which was called, quote, the root of all evil. And another said, if the Russellite faith is not suppressed already, it should be immediately.
Wow.
Okay.
You know, with the perspective of history, I think they might have been overreacting a little.
Yeah. They were trying also, to take like, away Prince.
Okay. No, again, just the historical perspective, like, this shit kept happening, and, like, okay, they were a very small part, but, like, they were targeted by Nazis. Like, they died in the Holocaust. Like, people really hated Jehovah's Witnesses. And it just seems like, again, I don't know. As we mentioned, I don't know. I'm not an expert. But it just seems a weird target. And it's probably for that lack of perceived nationalism because they're not taking oaths. Just such a fucking wild reason to hate someone.
I apologize. This was before I kind of got into the rhythm of script, so it was a little disjointed. But yeah, the reason that...
Apology accepted.
Well, part of it is just that at the time, they were only known as the Russellites. This was just as, like, all the divisions were happening.
Yeah.
And so part of the belief is that the minister, Houston Osborne, had preached that the apocalypse was imminent because of the World War. And anyone who participated would go to hell, while those who did not fight would be spared. And again, it's kind of a thing where the Cleburne County Draft War, which I read an article that was published in the Arkansas Historical Quarterly, it's just kind of like, well, we call these Jehovah's Witnesses now. But it's a thing where we couldn't say, I can't say if the route they were on would even be what we know as Jehovah's Witnesses these days.
Yeah, it was more contested. Yeah.
And the Atkinsons themselves said that they were just conscientious objectors.
Oh, so maybe then so possibly it wasn't the faith. Possibly, I mean, again, with hindsight of history, like
and
World
it can
War
also,
One was so dumb.
It can also
so
be both.
Stupid. What'd you say, Daniel?
I say it can also be both, like religious objections and conscientious objectors. Like, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks everyone for listening to this.
Can we also this is your end part where we say, like, because we're not going to do stuff about all this stuff, but like this kept happening with Jehovah's Witnesses, right? This happened at least once, I think, during World War II,
And then in the 1930s, I think it was in Marshall. So in order to get public relief, right? So, you know, it's the Depression. We got the New Deal. And if you went to the welfare office to get some help, you had to salute the flag, and I believe also say the pledge. Well, if you're a Jehovah's Witness, you can't do that.
Right.
So there was, you know, this poor farmer in Marshall who could not get aid unless he, you know, went against his religious beliefs. And that went all the way to the state Supreme Court, which, of course, ruled against him. And then later, you know, similar cases went in front of the Supreme Court, and the Arkansas case was used to bolster the argument against the idea that religious freedom, you know, means that you could get out of these requirements, which, of course, is ironic now because everything is flipped now with the idea that, you know, you could be a baker and not sell cakes to gay people, right? Mm-hmm. It's just how things change to help a particular narrative. Anyways.
We Always Lie to Strangers is brought to you by World War One.
The Great War.
Well, I was thinking I put in that music at the end, and I like the idea. It, you know, you listen and then you hear the music fading in, so you know that the episode's almost over, but then it's like a 3-minute Raymond.
You actually just fade, you just fade my voice. You just fade my voice out with the music. That's what you should
do. I don't know.
Do.
I actually like that historical context, though.
No,
I think
for
that's
sure.
Like,
no, the
great for
the
this.
The historical context is good. I don't know. I can tell you my concerns off recording, but anyway, thanks everyone for listening. We Always Lie to Strangers. We don't always say our names, but I guess today we will. I've been Sharp Woolston.
I've been Daniel Smiley.
I still am Gus Carlson.
And I'm Raymond Mathis.
Farewell,
and
friends.
We'll see you next week. Hello, it's Sharp with the sources. The primary source for this was the Cleburne County Draft War by James F. Willis and the Arkansas Historical Quarterly, with some supplementary information from the Cleburne County Draft War page on the Encyclopedia of Arkansas. Also, we have a small bit from A People's History of the United States by Howard Zinn, and a little bit from Appeal to Reason on the Encyclopedia of the Great Plains by Virgil W. Dean. Thank you for listening.